Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Griplock Preview Show for the Open at Austin, our second out of what's going to end up being four Texas events, but three Pro Tour Texas events. The Texas swing is in full effect, but this is going to look a little bit different from last year's Open at Austin. I believe they changed, if I heard right, like 16 out of the 18 holes, somewhere in that range. Basically, a whole new course, but it's on the same property. So while it is a brand new course, it's still going to have a lot of feel of last year's course. I think that last year's course just got a little bit too much negative feedback. It seems like the pros that loved it really loved it, and the pros that didn't really didn't. So probably a good idea to switch it up a little bit, but it seems like the core essence of the Open at Austin is going to be the same.
Well, it's funny that I noticed, because I don't, there's some players, obviously there are players that don't love the golf course style disc golf where you have a lot more open, a lot more OB. But ultimately they're getting more used to that because there's so much more of it on tour. What I think rubbed players the wrong way on this course last year, which I didn't necessarily agree with, was the amount of uncommon shots that it called for, a lot of shots that you don't typically see. And I think that immediately rubs players the wrong way instead of them just considering, well, maybe I should just throw the different shot. And when I watched, I was able to watch the front nine of the course, cause that's what was available to me at the time. And then I looked through the whole caddy book and I'm seeing a lot more typical lines, but you're right. It's still capturing the essence of like, still a ton of OB open shots. I think it looks really good. Honestly, I think it actually looks better than last year, just at face value. Obviously I'll have to see how it plays out. But I think it looks really good. I like this style of course. I think it is going to have a lot of decisions built into it. And I think having OB, the separation that it provides, is always very exciting. The first thing that stood out to me from this course is the par threes. A lot of par threes, a lot of shorter par threes, and many of them are just surrounded by OB. Some of them even feature hazards, but these par threes look super, super tough. There's going to be a lot of scoring separation. There's a bunch of them down the stretch with a lot of tight OB. I'm really looking forward to watching those play out. I think that I was just saying not too long ago, there's not a ton of short par threes yet, and there was a handful that were under 350 feet, just have a lot of OB, tighter shots. So I'm excited to watch that play out. But yeah, I think the course, similar essence, but maybe a little more familiar to the players.
Yeah, no, it'll definitely, I feel like last year from a viewer standpoint played pretty well. I feel like I enjoyed it, but you definitely heard some grumblings, and I think you're right that it was a lot of like, there were certain shots that were just asking you to like throw weird stalls or late flip ups or which I'm all about.
I like it
when pros are asked to throw stuff that they have to think, because to be real, I don't think that pros have to think that much out on the disc golf course until the modern era of disc golf. So I'm excited about that. And speaking of like the shortness of it, Edwin pulled together the average feet per par stroke, which is a fun stat. So basically you take the feet, how long the course plays total, and then what the par is to get the average feet per par stroke. And that kind of gives you a better, because like there could be a course that's really long, but the par matches it and it's actually going to be easier per par stroke. So this comes in at the fifth shortest course on tour, at 143 feet per par stroke average. Interesting fact, the shortest one on tour was actually Brazos East that we saw last week at 126 feet per par stroke. So playing a, obviously it'll play way different, but a little bit harder distance-wise feet per par stroke coming into this weekend. Another thing that's going to affect how this course is perceived, how this course plays, is the weather. It's looking like, as of right now, rain all 3 days, possible thunderstorms, not a high chance of thunderstorms, thankfully, but at least rain and a decent bit of wind out there.
Yeah, I'd say rain can bring wind, and anytime you have a course that's more open, there's a little stretch that's in the woods. Most of this course is in the open though. And anytime you have that, the weather's a much bigger factor. You can have quite a bit of weather, but if you're in thick woods, it's not going to affect your game too much. Easy to keep a disc dry, easy to stay out of the wind. Whenever you're dealing with a lot of OB, wet grass, shorter wet grass, when you're on golf course like properties, those OB greens, especially, you're gonna get bigger skips. That might help you if you're trying to skip off of a green. So that's always a factor. I'm also curious to see with this, you know, one of the big complaints from the viewer standpoint was the visibility of the OB. I know this course, especially because it was brand new, was kind of difficult to track last year. I remember watching it and being like, you seeing a drive go up and being like, all right, where does that need to land? Like, I remember shots landing being like, is that good? Is that bad? I have no idea. And so that will be interesting to see if they've made, I think they did, like when I was looking at the caddy books, it seems like a lot of the OBs, they actually, there's a lot of OB carries, which I think is really fun on this course. There's quite a few. There's one, one par three that's like a 400-foot carry over OB, which is really cool for the men. And then there's a lot of more like left, right, straightforward OB. There's a few that are kind of tricky shapes, and those OB greens always make it tough because they kind of come out of nowhere. But I'll be interesting to see how that plays out. What we just need to get to is we need a first down line technology. And imagine if you could see. I mean, that's not even something that they're using in on the PGA Tour, although they probably could if they wanted to. But imagine being able to see in real time like red OB lines on the broadcast.
PGA Tour, I feel like it's pretty clear.
Yeah, where OB is. And guys don't even hit out of bounds very often.
And if they do, you're watching the ball zoomed in roll over the line into water most likely.
Yeah,
usually but
it's
at least
a big old splash, right? Yeah.
So you
or a grandstand, or
a little bit different, but that would be
incredible. That would change the game. Disc gets near a green and the whole thing's highlighted.
I'm surprised Jomez hasn't done something like that yet.
Well, they've done it for like, and one thing that I liked that Jomez did with the like they would do the drone shots of the hole and they would do it that way. And I think that's helpful. But yeah, obviously doing it in real time.
Doing it real time, just wait.
That seems like a nightmare.
Yeah, we're not. Let's get HD streams first.
Yeah,
and then we can worry about projecting
some work.
On there. Now, a lot of storylines. So last year's top three was Gannon Burst, Simon Lazat, and then you had Calvin Heimberg and James Proctor tied. Like we said, the course has changed, but the essence hasn't really. So I think those still are players to watch. But Calvin Heimberg is currently on the registration list after dropping out of Waco due to a lingering elbow injury. So a lot of questions still around there. What are we expecting of him if he even plays this weekend?
It's tricky. Like lingering elbow injury is super vague, right? So
that's a terrifying topic.
Yeah, that can
terrifying terms.
That can literally mean he had some sort of, I mean, if it was enough for him to withdraw from the event, you have to imagine there's reason for real concern, not just soreness.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It could, especially because the season just started. That's where it gets you. And you do a lot of times see players. It's when the season kicks off, that's when elbow injuries do arise in baseball. There was a pitcher for the Yankees, Garrett Cole, that just had this happen to him. He's getting evaluated for an elbow. A lot of times, right when the season kicks off, guys start to get back into full swing, and that's when their injuries pop up. So that is concerning that the season had just started. It makes it feel more like an injury and less like soreness and fatigue. And in that case, you know, he's back after 1 week. You hope he's not rushing it. Elbows are just tricky. Some days they're good, some days they're bad. If anybody's ever had a persistent elbow, and you know, guys try to play through them a lot. Simon for years had issues with his elbow, tried to play through it. I really, really hope this isn't something that sticks around, and I hope that if it is serious, he just treats it right away. Because Calvin Heiberg is what, 27, 28? He's getting up there.
Yeah.
He's starting to get older.
I mean, he's still young.
No, he is. Yeah. He's certainly in his prime now.
27 is like your athletic prime.
He is. No, yeah. He's arrived in his prime 100%. Right now. So we just do not want, that to get wasted by him trying to play through an injury and then having to repair it if there's something wrong. So personally, I am pretty cagey about him. I'm not. Like I said, if he's just feeling good this week and it's not in his head, but that's the other thing is like
it's in your head.
If you feel bad 1 week and then fine the next week, but it was something that was persisting, it's going to be in the back of your mind. Like the next throw could make it pop up again. And that's a difficult place to play. So I think expectations should be lowered for him this week. He hasn't had the best start to the season, although he may have been feeling an injury. So now that starts to make sense too. I'm just really bummed about the whole thing.
Yes.
Honestly, I hate it.
I'm not touching him with a 10-foot pole this week. And my non-doctor, non-medical, probably shouldn't speak on the topic experience. I don't feel like he should be playing. Like if it's a lingering, hate that word, elbow injury, hate both of those words in disc golf, and it, you had one event where you came outside the top. I think he's in 26th or something.
28th,
somewhere. So close to, like, barely inside top 30 at chess.com. You had a week off with Memorial. Then you drop out in the next week. So a performance one points to something's going on. It's not normal.
It's a timeline thing, you know?
Yeah.
Because if it was, let's say it's tendonitis. Let's say he went to it depends on when he got it evaluated. Because if he went right after the first tournament, which could be the case, and they told him, hey, you got tendonitis, you need to rest. And then he was resting. And Waco was more of a, you know what, I need one more week of rest. I feel a little better about it than if it was, he didn't get evaluated until right before Waco because that's when he realized it was a problem. Like elbow died. Like there's a reason elbow injuries in throwing sports. Some of the highest paid, best specialist doctors in the world are people that do just that, evaluate those injuries because they are very tricky to identify. And they are tricky operations a lot of times to fix them. So it's just not, it's not good. If it's just tendonitis though, it does, you know, you just got to rest it, but that's just an annoying injury. Yeah. So annoying.
So, very interested to watch what, cause I mean, like I said, he came in third out here last year, only lost by 3 strokes. Yeah. He's a player that this type of course could perform very well.
Surely, yeah.
I mean, last year he performed at every single course well. So rough start at chess. Kind of got some answers from Waco because elbow injury. He's back this week. Definitely a big storyline to just watch. And hopefully it doesn't come to this, but hopefully if he gets out there and doesn't feel it, it's a DNF. And, you know, as much as it would suck to miss Calvin Heimberg for a stretch of this season, if that means we get Calvin Heimberg back, you know, full health late, then that's what we want. Because like you said, I mean, as old in the modern day disc golf 27 is, disc golfers can play and be competitive into their, like, 40s. And so, like, he still has so much career ahead of him where he can still compete. So you got to use that scope when you're looking through things too, of be like, you know, it might be worth putting my career on pause for like a few months to get this thing to 100% instead of trying to play at 80.
Yeah.
But that's a lot of speculation with zero actual knowledge, because he could just be at 100% going into this event.
Who knows?
Which hopefully that's the case, and hopefully he plays like it. Now, another player that's missing, well, Calvin's not missing, a player missing this weekend is Ricky, which is planned before the season. This isn't like some type of flare-up or something, but what are your thoughts on him missing this event when he has a week off next week with USW DGC already?
I totally forgot he was, honestly. I forgot about that. Now that I remember you're talking about his schedule, I remember seeing that now. I think that as players get, you know, you got players like Rick and the more successful ones, obviously they are able to take more scheduled breaks. I do think it's a little interesting taking it now. I guess if you were to want to take a longer, more extended break, this is a great time to do it. Early in the season, these events get forgotten later down the road, and Texas States is kind of like,
he will be back for that.
That's his mainstay. So I think it makes sense for him to take a break here. But yeah, so yeah, I don't really think much of it. And it was planned. So yeah, I think there are weirder times to take a break in the season. I think it actually makes quite a bit of sense.
Yeah, I think I'm curious if it's just something with this course, because I'm trying to remember. He obviously, he didn't come in the top 10. I have that in front of me last year.
Yeah,
I don't remember if he played last year. But I'm wondering, you know, this course wasn't a player favorite, so it could just be something where you're looking at it and you're looking at your schedule coming in. You're like, all right, we're gonna start at chess. We're gonna come over here. We're gonna be back in Texas here. You're gonna spend a month in Texas. You're probably already thinking about traveling home because he lives in Arizona for that like USW DGC week. If there's one of the Texas events you're not playing, if I'm looking at it and I'm Rick and I'm dominant at Texas States and Waco's an Elite Plus event, yeah, I'm probably saying, sorry, open at Austin, deuces.
Yeah, like I said, it of all the places for him to take a break on the tour, this one, it does make sense to me. Early in the season, get yourself a two-week cushion, like, you know, not bad at all. And yeah, the course is, it's a kind of a Wild West situation when it's a brand new course of tour from last year and it's changed a ton. So it's not like he can go in. It's not like he's missing it thinking, oh my gosh, like that was the softball pitch. Like that's the one
that
I had a really good chance of winning. Ricky has a good chance to win every week, but this isn't one where he'd be sitting on like Texas States where he's like, that's a tournament. No matter how they lay it out, I feel good at Texas States. I win that tournament. So, and there's so many courses on this tour that he does have a history, that would be tougher for him to miss because he's thinking, oh, I've won that before, or I almost won that last year. Like, he's going to feel that way about most events. So, this is a good one for him to just take a breather.
Now, a player who feels like that about this event for sure is Gannon Burr, reigning champ of the Open at Austin, also coming fresh off of a win at Waco. And if you include the Memorial, just an A-tier, but a pretty well-attended A-tier, he's coming off of two wins.
Yeah.
Apparently, according to StatMando, this is his first time, I believe they said first time ever to go, if he goes three in a row as an MPO player.
Yeah.
I believe is what they said. So how do we feel about him coming into this event with such a full head of steam?
Gamber is the most dangerous player on tour this year. That's just going to be the reality of it. I know it's early in the season, but he's won. I forget what the date range is, but like in recent history on tour, he's won more than anybody. I think he will continue. I think this year he will still win more than anybody. His game is so well-rounded. The key for him is starting well. He starts a tournament well, and if he gets himself in position, he is just so dangerous. He gets very locked in, and clearly the new discs are gelling pretty well, as we expected. He won at this course last year. It's going to demand similar shots. If there's wind, he's a great wind player. I think Gannon, it's hard not to look at Gannon and think this could be a great time for him to go back-to-back. No Rick as well, who would have been a huge obstacle for him. So, and maybe not a Calvin. When you think about Gannon Burr right now, not having to beat Rick and maybe not having to play Calvin at all or at 100%, I mean, the door is wide open.
Yeah, no, definitely. It feels like this could be a very good weekend for Gannon. I agree. I think round one is not a make or break round.
This is the most important
but
one.
But I feel
always
like it's the most important
one.
Because if he's on lead card or chase card after round one, I really like him to win this event.
Yeah.
If he falls like round one, he comes out a little cold for whatever reason, and he finds himself in 20th, he can be. Now, this could
change. It's a three round event, too. Because in a four rounder, I would say after round two, like you can have that hot round two to get yourself back into it before moving day. But a three round tournament, you've got to play three good rounds.
Yeah.
You have to.
But with Gannon, this is a new year, so it could be a new Gannon. But previously, what we've seen is if he gets a little out of it, even if he still has a chance to go hot round, he'll mentally check himself out.
He's admitted that. He's literally said, you know, when I'm on the lead card, when the cameras are there and the pressure is elevated, that's when he's able to get the most focus, which is just terrifying if you're a competitor. Because a lot of guys in disc golf, there's a reason many of the hot rounds come from further cards.
Yes.
Very rarely do you see a lead card hot rounds. Gannon Burr is not that guy. Gannon Burr is better when he is.
Well, he is that guy.
Yeah, he is that guy. he is much better when his competitors are right there next to him. And, we've seen that time and time again.
Another player that is looking like the guy to beat out there two events into the season is AB.
Yeah.
He's had a very hot start. Winchess.com came in fourth at Waco. Are we expecting that hot start to continue this weekend?
I mean, it's tough. I'm trying not to stay too high on him because I don't want to just be ridiculous, because nobody just rattles off top five. That's just not typically
except for Calvin.
That's not typically what you do in this sport. This course could match up to him. I mean, it is going to be a course where getting off the tee, having distance are going to be valuable. Although I will say a lot of the par threes are going to play for a ton of guys. You know, there's one par three, I think is like 460 downhill, but a lot of them aren't super far. So he might not see his advantage play. You know, you mentioned this being one of the shorter courses. He's not going to see his advantage in distance play at this open course the way it would at others. Courses like Portland maybe, but he's good. He's playing well. He's got a full head of steam. He's got a win under his belt. I expect him to be around all year, but three straight events with really high finishes, I'm not going to be shocked, but I think it's at this point, at least for my predictions, I'm going to back off a little bit, just because almost the rule of the hot hand. Like, I don't think he can go three in a row. But maybe I'm just saying that to fade myself.
I think you are, because I think he can, and I think he's going to. So I think that the way the tour lines up right now, I like him, I think after this we go to Jonesboro. right? Right after the
after the Texas swing.
Yeah, I think we go Jonesboro, yes. Then Music City. I think come like Music City is where
that's where he took like third place last year.
Okay, so maybe it's yeah. Champions Cup by Champions Cup at Northwoods is where I think. Like I like AB early part of the season.
He could dominate.
A lot more golf courses, a lot more of this style. Where yes, distance isn't going to be a make or break, but it certainly helps on longer holes because you can bite off more. Or if you're having to play a 400-foot carry, it's a lot easier if you have 600-foot power than if you have 450.
If he's playing OTB in Portland, and I'll tell you, three rounds at Ivy Hill at Worlds this year, that course is going to play right into his hands.
New London, I kind of like him out there.
It's doable. It's a wooded
course.
It's not super tight, though.
But it's not nearly as tight. And
Distance is big. He could be a serious threat for Worlds this year.
I think he could be a serious threat all year long. We know he can be a threat at European Open.
I know.
I'm not going to get too far ahead of myself, but I do think early season right now is his time.
Yeah.
I think he's feeling it. He's feeling good. I'm going to keep riding with him.
There are stretches of the season that I'm hoping that he can be a guy going forward that every part of the season fits him. And I think he can be, because you know that you see a lot of players where there are just certain parts of the season that kind of fit their game based on where the courses are, what the terrain's like. But you know, we don't always get to see players realize their potential in the sport. A lot of guys are pitched to us as young guns, next thing up. And I think we found in disc golf, you have rare exceptions. You've got your Eagles, your Gannon Burrs. Gannon Burrs really the guy that's been able to do it in the modern game where he actually comes up hot, breaks in as like a 17, 16-year-old. But a lot of guys, it takes them into their younger 20s, even their mid-20s before they're really able to emerge. And Anthony Barella, I think he's 24. I think he's a year younger than I am. He's finally starting to realize that. And I really hope that this season can become, we can look back and be like, yeah, AB was top five this year. Like he became one of the next guys, like the guy that's going to fill in there with your Gannon, your Kyle Klein, like be a part of that lineup, because it's been a long career for him, probably a decade plus of he's the next Paul Macbeth. And it's always good to see a guy like that be able to realize that and not just be what could have happened.
No, absolutely.
So I really hope that this year, and I think it will be, I think when you look at the future, I see him being a part of that, right along with those other names I mentioned, like your Gannon Burrs and your Kyle Kleins, Isaac Robinson. I see him in that group.
Oh, absolutely. Now, speaking of Isaac, several top pros, including Isaac and including Simon, missed the cut.
Yeah.
At Waco last week.
Cut was ruthless last week.
Pretty shocking, to be honest. Yeah. Because like Simon can have his ups and downs. Isaac, I guess, also can, but I don't feel like either of their downs are typically this low.
I have to remember, I'm trying to think, but I feel like, so Isaac, whenever we would compare him for player of the year, a lot of people looked at some of his early, really bad finishes, and I want to say Waco was one of them.
It might have been.
I might be wrong, but I feel like he took a couple like real bad finishes towards the beginning of the year that people pointed back to. And so while people may be like freaking out a little bit, I think this is not a time of the season that Isaac thrives. And like I said, one thing that will take him to that next level is being able to play all parts of the tour.
Yes.
There are very few players, like I just mentioned, that can do that. And being able to kind of overcome that and be able to adapt and play every course competitively is what makes you that next level of great, where we're not just calling you the next Chris Dickerson, we're calling you the next Paul Macbeth, because you're somebody who every event is a favorite, not just this course.
This course suits him.
Exactly. You don't want to be Isaac, and every time it's a shorter course, like, oh, this course suits Isaac. But right now, that's kind of where we're at. We know come Champions Cup. Champions Cup.
Not really.
Maybe not this year.
But I still like him in Northwoods. Yeah, but when it gets to that technical.
Whenever we get to that more technical stretch of the tour, whenever things start moving back east, that is when Isaac Robinson, we expect him to play well. And so I think that if he is able to pull it together and start putting together some better tournaments on this front half of the tour, that's going to do a lot for his reputation moving forward. And when we're staring at player of the year voting at the end of the year, if he can get himself back into that conversation, it's going to help a lot, because taking some bad finishes, missing a cut already, that doesn't look good when you have to compete with somebody like last year, Calvin, who just top to bottom was perfect.
Yeah. No, I think I personally like him at this course, because I think that with so much OB, it's gonna play, it is an open course. Well, I mean, there's some wooded holes, but it is on a golf course, right? But I still think it's going to play kind of like a technical course, because you're gonna be able to be a surgeon and slice and dice this place
and
up.
It's shorter than some other ones like it. So I see your point there.
And then Simon, on the other hand, came in second last year, lost by two, had a chance here. So both of them zeroing in. There's more top pros.
Simon's most unpredictable player ever.
Zeroing in on both of them last week doesn't concern me.
Yeah.
Like,
no.
I weird, sure. Hopefully just an anomaly.
Yeah.
I think they could both easily be top 10 or be pushing for the
win. Simon is impossible to predict. Impossible.
Now, with the weather looking rough this weekend, the rain, the wind, stuff like that, are there any players that come to mind when you see that type of weather and think, oh, that lines up for this guy's game?
Rain, you know, I feel like a lot of players handle the rain pretty well. The wind gets in some players' heads more so than others. I do think it was pretty windy last year.
Yeah.
Looking back, and like I said, Gannon is a good wind player, so I think that that immediately suits him. But a lot of those top players, you know, they've only been able to get to this level because they play a lot of disc golf, and that includes in all kinds of
yes.
weather. Those guys out there, like this, your Kyle Kleins of the world, they don't care. You know,
no.
they're going to play really well no matter what. They're prepared. There's not, you know, disc golf. I'm sure there's a lot of guys who dread the weather, but I don't feel like I've been able to notice a trend of play styles for sure. Somebody like a Kevin Jones, not that he's really doing anything this year, but somebody who plays a lot on hyzer with flippier discs is always going to have a little more trouble in the wind than somebody like Gannon who's just forcing stuff over. Somebody like Ricky who can force stuff over.
Yeah.
Or even a Simon can do that too. You know, so that might be a pattern as well. Simon played well in the last year in the wind. So there is things like that to pick up on. But as far as attitude and body language, I haven't been able to notice a ton of players where I'm like, oh, bad weather, here's your guy. Maybe
yeah.
a guy like Matty O. Like, you know, Matty O is always hanging around, but I feel like a guy like him especially, he doesn't care.
No. Yeah, no, I think I don't have a player. I mean, there's some performances that come to mind. You had Calvin USDGC when he was looking like a friggin' wet dog out
yeah,
there shredding that
course. Anytime I think rain, immediately the first thing literally that pops into my head is Calvin soaking wet at USDGC,
yeah,
just tearing that course up. No rain jacket.
You had Raincoat Rick for a little
bit
there.
True.
So there's definitely been some players. But to your point, even Cal, like those players do tend to favor a lot of times the more force over, throw it flat
yeah.
type of a play style, which does line up more to Gannon Burr, Simon Lazat. But it also, to me, it takes the edge off of the distance throwers a little bit because I think
yeah.
it makes everyone pull back a little bit, play a little safer, play a little
That's
more
true.
Conservative, which I do think makes the field come back to a guy like Isaac.
Rain and wind can also make the worst putters have a better chance. It takes
yes.
a lot of putting out of play.
Speaking from experience, when we go to a flex start or something and there's a lot of wind, we're licking our chops because
everybody's
laying up.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It makes us shaky.
Throw
30
with the best
footers.
Of them, yeah.
yeah. But it does also, Aaron Gossage has had a great start to this season.
It's a good point.
Forehand dominant.
Yeah.
Weather comes in. I don't like forehand players near as much.
That's a good point. It is, you know, it's tougher to grip a disc forehand. It's tougher to get rotation on a disc forehand. That's just a fact.
I got two fingers instead of four on there.
Yeah, you're never
going to. Does Aaron throw with one finger? There's someone on the tour that has a one-finger
I feel like
guy.
He might have a one-finger
I mean, one
grip.
Finger.
Or maybe he might be a three-finger backhand guy.
Maybe that's it.
That might be it.
Either way, less fingers on the disc, increased slip factor.
Yeah. No,
could be a bad week.
If it's wet outside, you might as well, like for me, you might as well forget about it. Like, I'm not throwing a forehand
I don't throw
at
a forehand,
all.
No. I think it leans towards the backhand guys.
Yeah.
James Conrad, this is weak.
I like it. James Conrad.
He's got to throw random names out there because, like, eventually one will hit and then
yeah.
you look like geniuses.
That's what I did last week. I think I'd rattled off six names when you asked me who could have a good week.
Hit.
Two of them hit.
That's,
yeah.
That's a good ratio.
Exactly.
Good
two for six.
Rate. Now, let's look at FPO. We're going to throw it over to Joe Henderson for our FPO preview.
We're heading into our third Elite Series event for 2024. This week, we're headed over to Austin, Texas for the Harvey Pennock Golf Campus. This course was just introduced to us last year on the tour, and I'm really excited to see how it plays out with one more year of being on the tour. There are 56 registered FPO players for this event. This tournament could be anyone's, but just let's throw it back to last year and see who was in the running to take this one down. From our 2023 Open at Austin lead card for our final round, we had Holland, Missy, Kristen, and the one who took it down, Paige Pierce. For this tournament, an accurate distance sidearm isn't a must, but it sure is helpful. Some players that fit that mold are Holland, Ella, Evelina, Kristen, and Owen. C1 and C2 putting will be a must. If you're giving yourself looks, you are going to be in the running to take this one down. There is a ton of OB on this course, so a lot of these women will be looking to place accurate placement shots and good landing zones for themselves so that they can really attack these larger par 4s and par 5 shots. Going down the stretch with 16, 17, and 18, those holes can stack up a lot of strokes, and they are so, so challenging. If we look back to last year's hole 18, it's probably one of the trickier hole 18s out on the Pro Tour, I would say, because the entire green is surrounded by OB. It's a very tight green, so anything can happen, and it's going to be a very dramatic finish, I'm sure. The nerves will be so high on this finishing hole because literally anything could happen. And I know for myself, even watching, my nerves are racing, so I can only imagine what these players are feeling. Wrapping this up, I have a few predictions of what could happen on this course, but this could be Paige Pierce's big debut back. This could be her big win of the season since she felt confident here last year. Maybe that confidence will just come back and she can go back to back. We'll see. Looking into the last two tournaments that we saw Paige at, she finished top 10 as well as top 13, which in my opinion, coming off of a surgery and a really dramatic injury, I feel like she's been carrying on pretty well. She has a couple holes here and there that kind of cost her strokes, but other than that, I would say she's probably looking in relatively good shape. There's a number of players that could take this event down, like I stated before, all of the players above, but you'll have to keep watching and stay tuned to see who will be the Open at Austin winner of 2024. Okay, guys, I'm going to send it back over to you.
Now, as she mentioned there, Paige, defending champion, you know?
Yeah.
Honestly, she made a good point. Coming off of the injury and everything Paige went through, I think she went 10th, 13th is what Joe said. Not a bad start to the season.
I want to say last week she was like plus 13 to Kristen's 20 under.
You don't have to look at that.
That might have been wrong, but it was a lot.
You have to cherry pick stats here, okay?
Okay.
10th, 13th. Mm. Good start, but still, even with 26, if you just look at Paige with her injury, I feel like she's gaining some confidence. Mm-mm. I don't think she has any chances.
I'm not
smelling my top three.
No,
I think for me, Paige is going to be a player who I need to see her get a top three before I pick her for a top three.
Paige has slowly become demoted from every other week winner to, yeah, she's still going to win random ones because she's still got game, to now I just don't even see that happening. Like, I don't see Paige Pierce winning an event at this point at all.
Yeah, I mean, how can it happen? But I want it for the comeback player of the year story.
That'd be a good one.
I want that.
Be a good one, yeah.
But, I mean, with the weather looking somewhat rough out there, this is a course that requires accuracy, requires you to pick where you're going to attack. I feel like, I mean, I don't see someone beating Kristen.
No.
I just don't see it.
I don't as well.
I don't see it happen. I think last year, if I'm not mistaken, did Holland Handley win this one? Someone won this one. Kristen still came in top three. She like snuck in. She was out of it.
Paige Pierce won this one.
I literally just said that.
What are you talking about?
Paige Pierce is the defending champion here. Good job, Hunter. Yeah. Read your notes. But Kristen in this one was like out of it and kind of like charged, but she wasn't charging for the lead. She was charging for third. That's what happened last year. So she didn't perform up to snuff last year. But like I said, the weather, the redesign of the course, and what she did last weekend, it's so hard to think someone other than Kristen's going to win.
It's certainly looking. Now, I will say, with the three-day
event.
With the three-day events, and we have a huge. Our next four-day event, I believe I looked at it yesterday, is Champions Cup.
Well, and USWDC.
Yeah, for them, they will have another one. They will have another one. But so there is a lot of three-day events mixed in.
Yes.
And she is a golfer where the shorter the event, the better for the rest of the field. Because she is the best, usually in rounds three and four, in those events where she has to make those comebacks, especially.
It's similar to Paul back in the day.
Yeah,
where
you give him too much time, he's going
to
win.
You give World seven rounds, right. Paul's going to
There's win. An amount of rounds for like a player like that, like Kristen, there's an amount of rounds where as soon as it gets to, like if you were to, let's say players didn't get tired, if you were to get to a certain amount of rounds, she's going to win every time. And I think that amount of rounds is like six or seven, where she could play it 100 times and she's winning that tournament every time.
And that's why Worlds, five rounds.
Yeah.
Going to be hard to beat her.
Very difficult.
I don't know why we're talking about Worlds so much already.
We're probably excited.
It's like coming to our area or something.
Yeah.
But going into this week, I'm in dead last at 5 points from our predictions. Trevor's in second at 9, and Joe is in the lead with 12 points. Let's hop into predictions. I'll kick us off with my MPO.
It's annoying because like my thing has always been the dark horse picks, and Joe
she's just taking them from me.
With impressive picks.
Yeah.
Kayla Visca was wild.
Yeah, that one.
Week.
Yeah. So MPO here. I'm going to go top to bottom because I think it gets shocking, more shocking that way.
Okay.
I'm taking Gannon Burr to win. I think he's going to go back to back both year and here. So, like, you know, defend his title and go back to back from Waco.
Yeah.
I am riding with Anthony Barella. Okay. I'm putting him in my top three, putting
him
in second
there. I'm
glad
you have the confidence
to. I like him. I like him here.
You know, I want to do it every week, but I have to spare it.
AB right now, AB and Gannon are my new Calvin until proven otherwise. So I'm sneaking him into my top
three
until I'm let down, which could be this week. And in the third place I'm going with here, really like this guy. He's had two top 25 finishes so far this year, and I think he's going to have a really good weekend out here, is James Proctor.
You always like Proctor.
I love Proctor.
You do. Yeah. I don't know if he's a top three
proctologist.
He's a top 10 guy. I don't know if he's a top three guy.
He's about to be.
Okay.
Did you not see my pick?
That's true. Your picks do say that.
Yeah.
Okay. I will also go top to bottom because I think mine's also more interesting that way because I agree Gannon Burr.
Nice.
That makes sense. I like, instead of AB, I like Kyle Klein. I think Kyle Klein has been hanging around this year. He came off of that USDGC win. Sometimes he goes quiet, but he's been very good this year. And then my third pick is the crazy one. I'm going with a guy who was able to win at a similar style course last year, longer course, but that doesn't really have to do with his game. Portland Open winner last
year. Yeah, I knew where you're going.
Adam Hammes.
Yeah.
I feel like it could happen.
It could.
He is the type of guy to sneaky play well at just like a few events each year. And I feel like this course could suit him. I like it.
Okay.
I'm throwing him in there.
We'll see. Now, Joe isn't scared of Calvin's elbow at all.
Not scared.
Picked him to win.
She'll probably, knowing how her picks have gone this year,
probably was gonna happen.
She's the only smart one here.
Yeah. So Calvin Heimberg takes it down. I do feel good if, as her being in the lead, she took Gannon to AB3.
Yeah, that does point. I've got an opportunity this week.
You do have an opportunity to gain some ground. We'll just keep
I really thought about doubling down and just trying to take Hammes to win because I'd look like a genius, but I can't do it.
That's a terrifying pick because he could easily come in sixth.
I got to hedge. Yeah, I got to hedge my bets.
Now, for FPO, we'll just go with Joe's picks. First, she has Kristen to win. I think we'll all have that one. Then she went Holland Handley second, Missy Gannon
Kristen Hall
third
and Missy
there.
Is just like, that's bread and butter.
Yeah.
Mine's a little different. I did Kristen to win. Holland in second, Evelina.
Oh, third. Mine's also a little different.
Okay.
I went Kristen to win, Owen in second, Missy in third.
I don't know how to think about Owen when these courses get a little further, but this course isn't that far.
And it's just rainy.
It feels far.
But I also just said, don't go beforehand.
Yeah. Not her, though. She doesn't count.
Throws
forehands.
No. Owen, if you only throw forehands, you know what to do.
Yeah, you're used to it.
Now, my dark horse pick, this is possibly one of the darkest of horses I've ever picked.
Okay.
But I like him. You know, I think he has a shot out here. Austin Turner.
Okay.
Give it to me.
Austin Turner trying to make a comeback. I'm going with somebody who so far this year seems like he is not going to be in the dark horse qualifications much longer.
Yes.
That's Joseph Anderson. He looks very solid.
Very solid pick there. And Joe, she's going with Paul Ulibarri.
Love it.
Great pick there.
Paul's been solid.
Yeah, Yuli's always a good dark horse pick. He also is a player that probably won't be
he might not qualify.
Available. I don't know. He'll ride that line.
He hangs around.
Yeah. He'll ride that 30th line.
We need to reestablish. I think it's 10 points if your dark horse wins the whole event.
I think that was it.
Yeah, because it has to be something crazy because it'll probably never happen.
Well, yeah, except for she picked Joseph Anderson. He was in first after round one at chess.com.
But he didn't win.
He didn't win.
He didn't win.
He didn't win.
But I think
it
10
is
points.
More likely this year than ever. But I like 10 points.
10 points.
It is crazy.
It's got to be significant.
Yeah, it is crazy. So that's going to wrap it up. Get out there, watch some disc golf this weekend, and we'll be back on Monday to tell you everything that went down.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit, credit to the people.
True or false? Walmart has eye care. True. Stop by Walmart to save and browse top designer frames right where you already shop. And they accept most insurance. Welcome to Easy Eye Care. Welcome to your Walmart.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
They say plants like music. Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.